We may be a touch repetitive today because Kevin preached on this story, was it last week or the week before? What? Balaam? Balak? 2 weeks ago. So, a little bit's going to be overlap, but I do want to go through this story, and this story is so long that we're probably not going to read. We're going to read just a couple snippets. And I want, while we're talking about it, y'all to think about what Kevin was talking about. Where he was talking about a church in Revelation, but relating it back to Balaam. And there's some, in this story, there's definitely a little bit of fill in the blanks. And I don't think it's hard to fill in the blanks. But it doesn't just outright say certain things. So if we're going to just brief overview, Balaam's probably known by most people for the talking donkey story. And if we look at that, God tells Balaam, this king comes to Balaam and is like, hey, I hear who you curse are cursed, who you bless are blessed, right? And so he's projecting what God does through him on an individual. So we get this, and we've talked a lot about that throughout the Moses story, but we're gonna look at it, and this guy is doing the same thing to Balaam, because where does Balaam get his ability to foresee and prophesy and to bless and curse? It's God, right? It doesn't come from anybody but God. So, but this king looks down at Balaam and said, hey, this is the guy. There's this great numerous people that is starting to get a little too close for comfort. And so I want to make war, and I want to have assurances that I'm going to win. And so he comes down and he talks to him and says, hey, curse these people. And Balaam says, I'm not going to do anything that God says not to. And then when we're reading it, we're like, hey, this is a good guy. And then all of a sudden, it says, God's anger came against Balaam, and he sent the angel of the Lord down, and the angel of the Lord is revealed to this donkey, and then he lets the donkey talk to his owner, right? And we're like, man, he did everything that God told him to do, right? At first, he's like, no, I will not go. And so we're all like, ooh, thank goodness, right? And then the second time he comes down and he goes and talks to God, and God says, hey, go with him, but don't do anything that I don't tell you to do. Don't say anything that I don't tell you to say. And so he starts going, and then all of a sudden, God's anger is brought up. What do we probably think that he was doing? Probably going against the one thing that he said not to, right? Don't speak anything that I don't tell you to speak. And so we're going to get into this story. And Kevin already burst the aha moment. And we see that here in a minute. Thanks, Dad. So we're going to go through this story. And again, there's a few stories in the Bible that you can come back that... Oh, why am I blanking on the word? Upcoming scriptures reflect back on. And so I did, thanks technology, a brief search of Balaam's name. And if we just look at it, here's what I want. I'm going to start with this, actually. Here is how, and these are just brief clips, and I'll tell you where they're from, but they're just brief clips of, if you look up Balaam's name, if you go past the story that we're in Numbers, he gets brought up in Joshua, Nehemiah, and 2 Peter. So in Joshua, Balaam, also the son of Beor, the one who practiced divination, was killed with the sword by the people of Israel among the rest of their slain. Chapter 24, then Balak, son of Zippor, king of Moab, arose and fought against Israel, and he sent and invited Balaam, the son of Beor, to curse you. But I would not listen to Balaam. Indeed, he blessed you, so I delivered you out of his hand. Nehemiah, For they did not meet the people of Israel with bread and water, but hired Balaam against them to curse them. Yet our God turns the curse into a blessing. Micah. O my people, remember what Balak, king of Moab, devised, and what Balaam, the son of Beor, answered him, and what happened from Shittim to Gilgal, that you may know the righteous acts of the Lord. Second Peter, forsaking the right way, they have gone astray, they have followed the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved gain from wrongdoing. He's never presented in good light, right? And so there has to be something that we're missing in this whole story. And we're going to read, it's going to start Numbers 21:21. We're going to go ahead and read that. And this is several chapters long, so I'm not going to do my typical read-through on this. We're just going to hit some snippets that your books talk about. And I do want to, we're going to get into Balaam, but this is the whole, I guess you would call it subtitle of this whole lesson, is God prepares the way. So we just learned, we just went through rebellions of Israel, three rebellions of Israel, and how God punished those. And then we have the looking forward and God preparing the way for his promise to come. And then we get further into that in lesson 64, which will be next week. Chapter 21, verse 21. Then Israel sent messengers to Sihon, king of the Amorites, saying, "Let me pass through your land. We will not turn aside into the field or vineyard. We will not drink the water of a well. We will go by the king's highway until we have passed through your territory." But Sihon would not allow Israel to pass through his territory. He gathered all his people together and went out against Israel to wilderness and came to Zahaz and fought against Israel. And Israel defeated him with the edge of the sword and took possession of his land from the Arnon to the Jabbok, as far as the Ammonites, for the border of the Ammonites was strong, and Israel took these cities. And Israel settled in all these cities of the Amorites, in Heshbon and in all its villages, for Heshbon was the city of Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who had fought against the former king of Moab and taken all his land out of his hand as far as Arnon. Therefore the ballad singers say, "Come to Heshbon, let it be built. Let the city of Sihon be established, for fire came out of Heshbon, flame from the city of Sihon. It devoured Ar of Moab and swallowed the heights of the Arnon. Woe to you, O Moab, you are undone, O people of Chemosh. He has made his sons fugitives and his daughters captives to an Amorite king Sihon, so we overthrew them, Heshbon as far as Dibon perished, and we laid waste as far as Nophah. Fire spread as far as Medeba." So they're starting on this path, right? And we can all see, if we go to the next story, where Balak hires Balaam. This is the lots of bees. I promise you I will get them confused at some point in the lesson, and y'all are just going to have to straighten them out, okay? But we see this war path, and they didn't start that way. Right? They asked us to pass through the land peacefully. We won't even drink water from your well. And what happens? They come against him. They say, "No, we're not going to let you pass through the land." And what does God do? Gives them the land, right? And so I think if we're going to get there, but I think if we fast forward and we're honest with ourselves about what Balak is going through, I think probably most of us in that position would do something similar, right? We're seeing this numerous people come through and wipe out kingdoms. That's probably a little nerve-wracking, especially when it's on your doorstep. What people miss is the peaceful part at the beginning. They ask for the permission, the peace. But when it doesn't happen, again, back to the title, God prepares the way. And so you hear these tales, and I'm gonna actually, this is gonna be a weird tie-in, but I like Jim Shockey. Y'all ever watch Jim Shockey hunting? No? Monty, have you ever watched Jim Shockey? You're a big hunter. No? So there's this guy, Jim Shockey. He travels the world. He's from Canada. He goes to some of the most probably unadvised for an American or a white person to go to. He's going to Pakistan during very volatile times. He's going to all these places. And what he does is he doesn't just hunt, but he goes to all these places, this history. He learns their history. He meets with the people. And it's some of the, if y'all ever watch TV and you want something that's wholesome and pretty neat, it's Jim Shockey. And one of my bucket list hunts now is in Croatia. And there's tales of these Croatian armies. During they call it the Bora winds. These winds reach up to 200 miles an hour, and what people hear about Croatia's army is they control the wind, the sea, and the devil. So these vast stories just get built about Croatia's armies because they would use their boats and their sails, and they would take advantage of these 200 mile an hour winds. And people were saying that they were moving faster than humanly possible. And their ships were just coming from the right direction and tearing armies apart. This small little place, this small little army. And so what do people hear all over the area, all over the world? Don't mess with Croatia, right? This is the same thing that's happening in this moment. Is these people from the wilderness are coming in and they're wiping out kingdoms. And again, when if you're outside of God, if you're outside of this, I'm going to call it a bubble. I know it's not a bubble, but outside of this bubble, these things don't make sense to you. And so what happens is he goes to a guy who he thinks he can help. And he doesn't realize that this guy's power and possibility is tied to God. We saw this with Moses when the people get unruly and unrest in the Israelite community. Who do they complain against, whine against, and want to overthrow? Moses. And he's here saying, I'm just a guy, right? Are you trying to overthrow me, or are you trying to overthrow God? Because you can take me out, God's still going to find his next person, right? What God's will is going to come to be, and that's assured. There should be no doubts about this. But over and over biblically, we have people placing their value in other people. That's what we have. And so I'm going to flip over. We're going to get to Balaam and Balak. It's going to be chapter 22. Balak summons Balaam. Then the people of Israel set out and camped in the plains of Moab beyond the Jordan at Jericho. And Balak, the son of Zippor, saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites, right? Fear in their hearts. They saw what they did to this massive army. And Moab was in great dread of the people because they were many. Moab was overcome with fear of the people of Israel. And Moab said to the elders of Midian, "This horde will now lick up all that is around us as an ox licks up the grass of the field." So Balak, the son of Zippor, who was king of Moab at the time, sent messengers to Balaam, son of Beor, at Pethor, which is near the river in the land of the people of Ammon, to call him, saying, "Behold, a people has come out of Egypt. They cover the face of the earth, and they are dwelling opposite me. Come now, curse this people for me, since they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I shall be able to defeat them and drive them from the land, for I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed." And I want y'all to pick this up, and then we're going to continue. This verbiage that he just used, this one-liner, is used a lot throughout the Bible. What does God say to Abraham? He who blesses you will be blessed. He who curses you will be cursed. This is just a follow-through, right? And again, the detachment from God from all of this is saying, hey, he whom you bless will be blessed. He whom you curse will be cursed. Which is in direct contradiction if it's going against God's people. Because what has God already said about his people? Those who bless you are going to be blessed. Those who curse you are going to be cursed. So you, and this is what I want to point out, because in when that line gets brought up, Israel's people, Jews, or whoever's reading this down the line, that's a trigger thing. That's something that these people have heard since they were itty-bitty. They've memorized it. They know it. And it should bring comfort, right? This is something that the people know. So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the fees for divination in their hand, and they came to Balaam and gave him Balak's message. And he said to them, "Lodge here tonight, and I will bring back word to you as the Lord speaks to me." So the princes of Moab stayed with Balaam, and God came to Balaam and said, "Who are these men with you?" And Balaam said to God, "Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent to me, saying, 'Behold, a people has come out of Egypt, and it covers the face of the earth. Now come, curse them for me. Perhaps I shall be able to fight against them and drive them out.' God said to Balaam, 'You shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed.' So Balaam rose in the morning and said to the princes of Balak, 'Go to your own land, for the Lord has refused to let me go with you.' So the princes of Moab rose and went to Balak and said, 'Balaam refuses to come with us.' Once again, Balak sent princes more in number and more honorable than these. And they came to Balaam and said to him, 'Thus says Balak, the son of Zippor, let nothing hinder you from coming to me, for I will surely do you great honor, and whatever you say to me, I will do. Come, curse this people for me.' But Balaam answered and said to the servants of Balak, 'Though Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I could not go beyond the command of the Lord my God to do less or more. So you, too, please stay here tonight, that I may know what more the Lord will say to me.' And God came to Balaam at night and said to him, 'If the men have come to call you, rise, go with them. But Put yourself in Balaam's shoes. How many times do we compromise our values for money, for small things, for things that we think deem as petty? How many times in a business setting are you willing to maybe cut a corner because that's going to save you a little money? How many times? I mean, put yourself in these shoes. This isn't. We look at it and we go, "Oh man, that guy," right? And we just let it pass over us. We just let it go right over our head that, hey, this might be talking to us. That God is saying affirmatively no. And we take it upon ourselves to grasp at what we can for riches, for honor, for fame, for all these things that Balaam's looking for. All these things that have been promised to you, it's the carrot. Everybody has their carrot. For some it might not be wealth, for some it might not be fame. But everybody has a carrot. Everybody has something that drives them, and they're hitting on what drives Balaam. And we're saying, well, if you know you can't curse him, and if you know God's going to have his way anyway, then how could you do that? How could we do that? I've done it before. We've probably all done it before. We get in these positions where you think, well, that's not that bad. Or maybe even, and this is going to read into it, but that's how my mind works. I'm not saying this is factual. This is a hunter opinion wholeheartedly. How many times have we thought, well, God's going to have his way anyway. Why can't I get a little bit out of it? Right? If Balaam's sitting there saying, well, God's going to destroy this people anyway, and he gets into a prophecy here in a couple chapters that is saying that God will overcome the Moabites. So we read it, he knows it, he's probably thinking in his head, well, I can probably give him a little advice, it's going to work for a little while, I can just take my haul and run. That sounds a little bit different than sometimes how we present it, right? How many times do we do that? How many times do we shut the God voice off in our head? It's easy, isn't it? It's easy to sit there and be like, hey, I just feel God pulling me in this direction, but if I just do this first, right? Or if I add my own little step in there, if I, then I would be a lot better off. What's better off? Is better off money? Fame, power, ruling. I mean, what's better off? Or is better off eternity with Christ? See, we often turn off the upper story. Kevin likes to talk about the upper story. I think it's important because we need to know that there's a difference. God's promise doesn't come in this life. God's promising something way better than this life. He's not promising us all riches and fame and glory and all this stuff. And we have to be comfortable with that. Jason said, and since we're in his era where it's going to repeat it a lot, guess who didn't get to go to the promised land? Moses. The guy, right? That everybody's been looking at for 40 years of wandering the wilderness and to lead him out of Egypt and all this thing. He didn't get the promised land. But I guarantee you got something way better than an earthly promised land, right? He went to something way better than a land flowing with milk and honey. It's a mindset, guys. And I do this every week because I think it is so important that we put ourselves in these people. If you read the Bible and you read it honestly, we can probably fit in most people's shoes. We've probably been there. We've probably done that. I'm not saying there's books written about it for all of our flaws to be out in the open, but if we're truly honest with people, if we're honest with ourselves, I guarantee we can see some easy falls. If I'm gonna be honest with myself, I can see myself as Balaam. I can see myself selling it because I know what God just showed me. I know God's plan always comes true. I know God's gonna go through with this plan. And if I can get rich on the side of it, plus, right? No, not plus. You're selling your soul for this. I have talked a lot. There's only 6 more minutes of... See, this always trips me out. Because the seconds hand doesn't move, so I always think the clock's broken. But I think it does work. I'm going to go ahead and we're going to open it up because I know that was a lot. We're going to open up for questions, comments. I know we read a little bit, and there's still a lot to read. A couple more chapters. But comments, questions. Just want me to talk more?
So, you know, I've gone through this story a lot of times, and I guess I look at it different as a dad at this point because of how many times I deal with it. When I set a rule, when I establish a rule, and I do this with my kids, I do this with my workers, my teammates, and everything else, I'll tell you the first time. I'll remind you the second time. I ain't telling you a third time, right? And so I look at this with those glasses where God told him, you're not going to go because I am blessing them, right? He told him very clearly the first time what the expectations are. And what I catch is when he tells the first set of servants, God won't let me go. He doesn't say, because Israel is blessed. And so the report back is, well, he just won't come. So now it's, well, go and offer him more. You know, when you leave that half of that detail out of there, it opens up. That's what he's done. Is he has opened himself up to more bribery or whatever. He just, it kind of trying to shift that blame, right? Well, God just won't let me go. So they offer more. And the second go around, he's like, well, you know, even if he offered me his entire house, right? So, and we can see that. Again, y'all know me, 2 + 2 = 4. And I really appreciate hitting all those verses cover, and total context because it tells us, ultimately God tells us he was a greedy individual, right? That's what we see. And so we can infer into this, even though it doesn't say that, his motivation was that, right? Because that second time, he says, I can't do anything God doesn't say. I've already told you what God told me. But go ahead and stay the night. Let me ask again, right? And I have guys that do that with me, and the kids do that with me, and I just take it as, you know, well, let's see if he'll change his mind. And when I start paying attention to people that do that, it's like, well, you already know the rules, but let's see if he'll change his mind. And that's what he's doing with God. He's trying to see if God will change his mind. And when I read that response from God, if the men have come to call you, rise and go with them, but only do what I tell you. And inflection can be a huge thing, right? We can read this multiple different ways. And so when I listen to God saying this, I hear it in more of a rhetorical voice from God. Where he's saying, well, you know, if that's what they're asking you to do, go ahead. Just remember what I told you. You know what the rules are. And to me, that's what God's statement is. But only do what I tell you. I don't necessarily take this, and I might be wrong, as him saying, go with them, and then I'll tell you when you get there. I kind of took this as more, you already know what the rule is. just follow the rule. And that, and I think that's why God got angry with him, because he got up and went. Because he knew what the intention was. So.
Yeah. The motivation's clear from the start, right?
Yeah.
And I appreciate you bringing that up, that this was an inception thing. Because if you reflect on it, odds are he knows God's chosen people, right? And so you're getting asked to curse God's chosen people. You're getting asked as one of God's people to curse God's people. And he knows that from the start. And there's promises, and it doesn't explicitly say what gifts were brought, but the divination price. Don't know what that was. I imagine there's a lot of theories out there. But yes, I think 2 Peter was the most clear cut. He did it for greed, for gain, for himself. And if we take all that in and we just look at how it played out, and there was a verse, I guess I can tell you exactly. It's talking about God turning it into a blessing. He's pointing the blame, and you can inherently tell from the get-go that Balaam's desire is for this honor and this wealth and these gifts that the king's promising to him.
Power.
His desire inherently from the get-go is for all of these promises. And so he's not aligned with what God is looking for and looking to do. His alignment is with his self and his own selfishness. And so I see Ken starting to pour up. Is there anything else? Nothing? Thank y'all for being here. I think Ken, probably Monty's going to be sitting up here next week. Unless he plans a surprise victory. Or Jason. We'll find